there were some parts in that piece about Lucifer that were allegorical that I actually put in there or just left in there so you could hear those parts twice. It's important for you to understand allegories. I can get you on top of our enemy's mythology. I can put the names together for you. I can cross mythology, but I can only get on top of it. Until you can crack Lucifer, you can't go any further. Lucifer was one of the sons of Poseidon, sons of Kronos, one of the sons of Ea, Enki. But as you just heard, he was no child. This is no ordinary child. Children aren't described as a jewelry store with fancy plumbings. This child built the pyramids in breakneck speed, and that's the pyramids of Giza. Not across the rest of the planet. That's another story. But this is in your enemy's mythology, and of course they worship those pyramids, don't they? They have them on everything. Everything's a triangle to this group. But it's important to get into this that subject matter simply because of our enemy's belief structure and what our enemy believes at the top. You're constantly dealing with this as a concept. And I'll answer a question. There is an individual that when you first come into alternative news and research, a lot of people find out about. He's been investigated by the federal government more times than most famous white nationalists. His name is Jordan Maxwell. And Jordan Maxwell, what I came to conclude when I started looking into this stuff is that he knew quite a bit about our enemy that he wasn't saying. When you deal with our enemy's mythology, everyone comes to the same conclusion. I'll answer a question like this. Jordan Maxwell goes out of his way to say the people at the top believe they're demigods and they descend from this group. And that's 100% correct. Everyone comes to that conclusion because that's what they say. They say they're related to the Nimrods. Nimrod, of course, is one of the great rebels. He's one of the great in the revolt. He was one of the first tyrants on the planet. It is another name, another pun, many believe, for Nergal or Marduk. He becomes Gaborim. This is a reference, most likely some type of pump or some type of giant, which means he became the Great Hunter. The Great Hunter is a reference to Orion. You're dealing with a split pantheon, and there's all these astronomical alignments, references to Orion. In other words, the pantheon, both sides would refer to it on some level. You're always dealing with the same concept. A very high paleo-ancient civilization comes into total war. And concepts are more important than absolutes because there's no one that has all the answers. And by the time the answers get here, well, you know, it would be over with. But you're always dealing with the same concept. And your enemy, our enemy, believes are related at the top, to the revolting side, to the side that revolted and got thrown down, the side that loses everything, that they went, quote-unquote, underground. Everyone asks, where would they be? Well, they would be underground. That's in all the mythologies of the world. They go underground after they lose the war. And in going forward, it's just something that's overwhelming over and over again when you get into the top of what these people believe. And we're dealing with royalty. When you're dealing with their structure, you're dealing with their manuscript, of course, is the Talmud. The Talmud was an oral thing handed down by Yahweh or Yahweh to Moses, by and large. Most believe that the Torah comes from the Talmud, not the other way around. In other words, the Talmud precedes the Torah. That is what most believe. I happen to believe that as well. That's their book. But you're dealing with a group basically within a group. I've been asked, what is the big deal with Neanderthal? Well, most believe that there is something up with the Neanderthal. There has to be. There's a contradiction even in Joseph P. Farrell's books where he quotes Sykes, and Sykes talks about the ancient mothers of European, and none of them are related to Neanderthal. Then, of course, he quotes Wikipedia, and Wikipedia says humanity's 4% Neanderthal. There's a contradiction here. The German researchers have said that, you know, humanity's 4% Neanderthal, but that's not evenly distributed. Most get the feeling that there's something up with Neanderthal. It becomes somewhat of a lot to get around, but in keeping it simple, we just the first thing you get to, we don't know everything. Well, you just get to the top of your enemy, and you find out that what they say they're related to at the top is a Y chromosome. They're related to Y chromosomes. They're always related to some rebel on the revolting side that goes into war with God and loses. On the bottom, they say they're related to something that they can trace through maternal lines or paternal. In other words, they're related to some type of ancient mother. And that could be traced through males or females. But when you get into Y chromosomes, when you get into the divine right of kings, what the Queen of England says, who's related to the Bushes and so on and so forth, you get into something that can only be traced through male lines. The question is, are they just crazy rich people? Well, that's a given. Or do they actually believe it? Well, that's a given too. They definitely believe it. I'm going to present a case in the next section. Does that mean that something like that is here? Well, if you're Christian, you believe the devil's loose. Well, I don't know that. I wouldn't know that until we see him. until we see this character, or any of these characters. But what you're dealing with basically is a group, a crew, a revolting crew that survived the war, that went underground, that would, if they're here, they're preparing to fight again. They're preparing for Armageddon. That's in short. Now, is there proof that they're here? No. There's only circumstantial evidence that they would be here. Is there proof that the people that are enemy at the top, the heads of Europe, all these crazy different families, is there any proof of what they say? Is there any Y chromosomal proof? No. Well, they haven't released that, at least. There is proof. A major amount of circumstantial evidence that they believe it, and they're acting out the part. Whether it been with trying to do crazy stuff with us, blend us out of existence, create a blended humanity in only white areas, or whether it have to do with whether it has anything to do with crazy experimentation that they're into. We're going to go into that in the next section. I'm going to make a case of circumstantial evidence that they believe it, but it would only be circumstantial evidence that something like that is here. And of course, if something's here, something's coming for it. You know, we can keep it simple. But you're always dealing with the same concept. You've got to crack the Lucifer code. If you were dealing with the giants, where the giants come from? What's the relationship between giants and Neanderthal? A lot of people believe that you got a Neanderthal qualifier and then the, a group within the group. You know, the whole group has a Neanderthal qualifier, and then within that group, you've got the Y chromosome. And the Y chromosome is the division of labor between the elitesters and everyone else. And when it gets to the top of the banksters, I'm not talking about Alan Greenspan, I'm talking about Rockefeller, Rothschilds, I'm talking about the European royalty and whatnot, they all claim the same thing. They claim they're related to the same group. They claim the Y chromosome. I've been asked if can the royal elements separate themselves from Rockefeller, Rothschild? No, because they all came to power at the same time. They all say they're related to the same people. If Rothschild is related to what he says he's related to, and I hope he is, actually. I hope it's true. That would be impossible to separate them. But here's their MO. And this MO is a pattern that comes out. When the Israelites came out of Egypt, we know from Manetho on the Hyksos, we know from the Hebrews own the Torah itself, that 80 to 90% got hammered. So if Yahweh was there, well, he doesn't care too much about them. This comes out time and time again in their stuff. When the Pink Rabbit elitesters were coming into Rome, when they took over Rome, when they took over the Roman legions, Talmudism was like a third of the Roman Empire. It was a huge, major Babylonian mystery religion. That wasn't around anymore. They annihilated the Sanhedrin. They annihilated the Druids. They come into a situation, they kill everything in sight. And if this pattern holds, they'll get rid of most of their group too. They'll get rid of the vast majority of their group with the exception of their Y chromosomes. The only thing Yahweh's concerned about is Moses. Aaron's deal is based on the fact that he has to listen to Moses. And when he doesn't, well, look out. Why do I think Yahweh's so interested in Moses? Well, the short answer is he's probably related to him. The crazy answer is he's related to him. That's his kid. You know, and this is some strange stuff, but how else would you have a Y chromosome? You know, if you've got a Y chromosome, that means you're related to some ancient father. The only way you can be related to some ancient father is that to be your ancient father. It's common sense. These people believe they're demigods. They're here to rule the world, make all the important decisions. And it's only relevant because they're trying to kill us. And there's a great deal of circumstantial evidence that they're trying to play out the part. And we're going to come back to several of these points, but the answers, I don't have all the answers. I can only put you on top of what our enemy says. And the fact that they believe it is important. It's important to some extent because, white rabbit genocide is ongoing. And these people are willing to do anything to get this new world order of theirs. But if the pattern holds, we would look for them to get rid of rid of most of Pink Rabbits. That's how they operate. They break spears. If they came out of Egypt and got rid of 80 to 90% and their god wasn't there, it's some big fantasy, that tells you something. If they came out of Egypt and 80 to 90% of the Hyksos got annihilated, the quote Israelites got annihilated, and their god was there, that tells you something even more. The only thing they're concerned about is Akhenaten. The only thing he's concerned about, and it would be a crew. It's like in South America. You got a crew. You got Yahuatl. You got some sorcerers. You got a pack of demons. How wonderful is that? And it's important to come back to time and time again. It's what they believe. In the next sections, what I'm going to do is present a case. I'm going to present a case right in front of our face that they're acting out the part. While it's impossible to prove that something like that is here, you should know that your enemy, our enemy, actually believes that they're related to it. But that is the division. The division is simply a Y chromosome. It's not based on what I say, it's based on what they say. They say they're related to these guys. They say they're related to the El Shaddus, who you think of as El Shaddai, who is, of course, Marduk. And it's the same deal, the same concepts. Several of these individuals are one and the same. Several of these individuals are allegorical, as you've seen with Lucifer. Lucifer has several different names, but he's a son of Ea, he's a son of Enki. He's no son. He's not an ordinary character. You've got several of these different individuals that are one and the same. It's like a green goddess concept, and that can be rather difficult. And you had a big, big war, and we have artifacts of giants in the ground. And so this war happened in all the mythologies of the world. We don't know how far back. There's a lot of mysteries here. One of the most interesting points about the giants, before I make the case, I'm going to talk about this briefly, is how much the Smithsonian plays in hiding artifacts in North and South America. When they came into North America, when my race, the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, came to North America, especially prior to the Civil War and after the Civil War, they started expanding across North America. They came across giant burial after giant burial after giant burial. And in this podcast, we're going to define giants, or if you want to define Nephilim, I don't care. You better watch your use of these words, but we'll define them. Usually over 10 feet, always with a head anomaly. They have, usually some big pointy head, like the ones found in Alaska, that the Dr. Farrell's pointing out to. Usually they have some facial skull anomaly. They are different, radically different. They're portrayed in mythology as radically different. Not human and not animal, different. They're portrayed in Western mythology as chimerical, meaning that they're neither human or animal. But generally, time and time again, especially post-Civil War, when these things were found, they would make the newspaper. You know, some little boy finds some huge skull with double rows of teeth, or something with a big pointy head, or something with some huge head anomaly. And there's only two I'll confirm, the big pointy head and the ones with the double rows of teeth, and most likely a different nasal cavity. But there's always, this is what you're dealing with. So some little boy will find it, he's playing around and he digs up some grave, which little boys do, and it makes the newspaper, and then all of a sudden everything disappears. You're always dealing with the Smithsonian in this stuff. Always, always dealing with the Smithsonian, especially post-Civil War. And this stuff just disappears into the Smithsonian. Well, what's interesting is there's a lot of ancient Indo-European. The indigenous white rabbits of Europe probably were in North America long, long before anyone knew, or long, long ago. There's all kinds of artifacts that no one can explain across the place, as well as South America. And a lot of that stuff in North America always disappears in the Smithsonian. It's the same group, like Kennewick Man. Most people know the controversy, the racialists would know the controversy with Kennewick Man. Well, you're dealing with something that's clearly Cro-Magnon Indo-European. But far, that was here far, far before any European settlers, any of the more recent European settlers into the Americas. And of course, you're dealing with the same groups affiliated with the Smithsonian that are always fooling with stuff. They're always hiding stuff. So that's one of the things that always made me suspicious about giants. I don't know anything there is to know about them other than what the Mr. Maxwells will come to conclusions of, or what anyone listening will come to conclusions of if you look at it for any length of time. And I would warn you, 80-90% of the stuff on giants online is half-truth, innuendo, or hoaxes. The only thing I believe is that these things were here because I've seen the skulls. One of the skulls is on the front cover of Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men, one of the big pointy skulls. They're not uncommon. You can go to certain museums, especially in South America, and see these things. They were found all over the place. But our enemy is constantly going out of their way to hide our stuff as well as to hide all kinds of questionable ancient stuff. And I have no idea the DNA of those skulls. I have no idea what they're related to. But you get into this question of our enemy always believes they're related to a revolting side. You get into giants. You get into demigods or all the above. You get into all these different tribes of giants and some very, very strange stuff. And they are acting out the parts. And in the next piece, we're going to go into what they're doing right in front of our face and how that associates with this group from the revolting side of the pantheon, right out of the Bible. We're going to bring in the Bible and mythology and all the other pieces. And I'll be back with you in a second. We'll start that process. There's a famous episode in the Bible in the Old Testament. I believe it's the book of Daniel. It's Bel's dragon. And, of course, the ideal is that the dragon isn't made of brass, that it's real, and he's talking to Daniel about it being a god and all this other kind of interesting stuff. Bel's dragon, and Bel, of course, is Marduk. And this goes back to the Ishtar Gate, and it goes back to something Dr. Farrell talks about in his book, and he does a pretty good job with it. It's Kolduvai's Conundrum. And Robert Kolduvai is a famous German architect and an amateur archaeologist. And they were analyzing the Ishtar Gate, the famous Ishtar Gate, with the animal reliefs. And the animal reliefs, of course, go back to Babylon. It talks about the sacred animals of Babylon. And there's a big dilemma among archaeologists. And that still is ongoing. You have the sacred animals of Babylon. You have the bulls, the lions, and whatnot. And they're always presented the same way. And then you have Bel's dragon. You have Marduk's dragon. What is called the Sirush. Sirrush. You can look up Marduk's dragon, though. Marduk, Marduk, dragon, spelled just like it sounds. Marduk's dragon. You will actually see this animal that was on the Ishtar Gate. It's been presented all over Babylon. It has a hind legs, some type of eagle, some type of bird. Has a the front legs of some type of feline. It has the neck of something I've never seen before. It's like a head of a dragon with horns on it, and it has a tail of like a scorpion. And they were trying to figure out whether it was an allegory for something. And if it was an allegorical representation of something, here we go again into allegories, well, why weren't the other sacred animals presented as allegories as well? I mean, if they have a bull as a sacred animal, they show a bull. If they have a lion, they show a lion. And then they have the Sirush. They have what's known as Marduk's dragon. You can look it up. You can see it. You can see it right off their reliefs. And what is it? Is it a prehistoric animal that went extinct and they're trying to show us something? What the hell is this thing? Because it's chimerical. Well, that leads to a pretty big discussion, and no one came to any conclusions. And, of course, in modern science, we've had a pretty interesting interesting go with chimeras. I've spent a long time on chimeras in another podcast. It's fascinating stuff. But typically, this has been ongoing in Western civilization, talk about chimeras in real life. Real life chimeras. And bringing something like the Sirush to life in real time since cloning. And cloning in Jurassic Park type science that could actually bring about real-life chimerical research, which, of course, we have being shoved down our throats right now. But in the Bible, you have Marduk, you have Marduk's dragon, you have the Sirush. No one on earth knew what this thing was on the Ishtar Gate. Everyone, huge arguments over whether it's a prehistoric creature, what on earth this thing is, and you can look at it, when, in fact, it's a chimera of some type. Was it real? Well, it had a priest class taking care of it. In other words, in ancient Babylon, there was actually a class of priests taking care of it, just like there was a class of priests taking care of all the sacred animals. You know, every sacred animal had its own priest class taking care of it. They were feeding it. They were doing all kinds of stuff with this thing. But it doesn't look like anything we've ever seen. It doesn't look like anything that would ever walk this earth. How would you do that? And, of course, the Germans were trying... Kolduvai was trying to figure out how on earth, what is this animal? Because this animal is clearly real in the text. They're feeding it. They're petting it. This is Marduk's dragon, for real. I mean, just like they would the lions and the bulls and all the other sacred animals. I mean, this is really crazy stuff. But at the same time, this is no animal. This is nothing like anyone could bring to life, at least at that time. At that time. In modern times, we have the answer. You see, Team Pink Rabbit Team Pink Rabbit goes hand in hand in mythological circles with chimeras. You can't avoid this. Even the giants are always presented as chimerical. That side is always everything's chimerical, whether it be a Marduk's dragon, which is always on our enemy side, or whether you get into modern science. If you're sitting around at your dinner table, you're probably going to be asking little white rabbits what they want to do when they grow up. Maybe this summer you're at a picnic, you're at a lake house, you're at some big family outing, you're going to have a bunch of little white rabbits, and little white rabbits are going to be running around, and, I want to grow up to fight white rabbit genocide. Well, that's fantastic. Someone has to do that. And then, of course, you might have another one say, I want to grow up to be a doctor. You say, all right. And then you're going to have one come up and say, I'm going to grow up, and I'm going to be a scientist, and I'm going to breed goats, and these goats are going to be chimerical, and they're going to produce spider milk. What? Where'd that come from? Where's that coming from? I want to grow up and I'm going to create a glow-in-the-dark kitty cat. Yeah, we're going to splice genes and we're going to create glow-in-the-dark cats. I'm going to bring mythological characters to life. Oh, okay. Yeah, you hear that every day at the dinner table. My race can do some strange stuff. When it comes to cloning, I get these emails, well, it's your race doing this stuff. Well, that's true. My race is being used to do this stuff, but they're just taking orders. We don't cook this stuff up. You won't ever sit at the dinner table with some little white rabbit who says he's going to create a goat, actually bioengineer a goat that will produce spider silk. Like a spider web. A goat that produces a spider web. We don't do that. We don't cook that stuff up. That's not something you're going to read on Stormfront. I don't care what forum you're on, that's not stuff little white rabbits are cooking up. We just don't do that. And I would speak for every other human. No, humans don't generally go down that road. My race can produce the technology, and my race is being harnessed to produce some very strange stuff. And of course, if you're a researcher, you do what you're told. You go where the money is for the research. And it takes a great deal of money, a great deal of time, a great deal of resources, and some weird imaginations to want to go this route. Cloning is something that, of course, it all started with. Cloning is something that, in my opinion, is relatively benign. Right now they're talking about cloning hair follicles, and cloning hair follicles is pretty straightforward, and then, if you're a lady and you want to get your hair thickened, they'll just clone your hair follicle and they'll go in and thicken your hair with your own hair. If you're a white rabbit and you're losing your hair on top and you want to have a full hair ahead, they're going to pull a hair, clone a hair, and give you a full head of hair. That type of stuff, or clone a particular body organ. Let's say you have a problem with your heart. They'll clone a heart and give you a heart. That sounds relatively benign. That's something that would be all right. That's white rabbit technology. That's pretty creative. I don't think they're going to turn into Antichrist just because they have a cloned liver or something. That's no big deal. Or a cloned hair follicles on your girlfriend's head. I don't think she's going to turn into some demon. But when you start talking about clones, it appears to be a gateway drug for pink rabbits. They ain't going to stop with that. They're cooking up all kinds of other stuff. Because if you can clone something, you can produce a lot more of them. And you can do all kinds of crazy stuff. Now, obviously, there would be huge moral dilemmas in cloning a vast majority of people. Let's say you want 100 old Bob Whitakers. Well, there could be some moral dilemmas in that. They would all be different people. They would all probably have independent personalities. It'd be like the clone army on Star Wars. They're all different, but they all look the same. But there would be some moral dilemmas with having a bunch of old Bob Whitakers who all look the same, and it'll also be pretty funny. But when you go down this road, where are they going with this cloning stuff? Well, that's where they were going with it. That's where they were going with Dolly the Sheep. They were going into scientists breed goats that produce spider silk. And, every week we have these weird news announcement. This is just from July 25th, 150 human-animal hybrids grown in UK labs. They're already getting patent on human-animal hybrids called Manimals. And this is not called chimerical anymore, it's called parahuman. So if you want to do research, do parahuman research. P-A-R-A. And it's very strange stuff. Animal-human hybrids spark controversy? Well, of course it does. Now this goes back to 2005. And some of the stuff is just so damn strange. The Asians have gotten involved. The Asians over past, I'd say, post-2005 have gotten involved with some of the interesting stuff they're doing. Now, most of this stuff is funded from the West. They're all attached to think tanks from the West. And, scientists create glow-in-the-dark cats. I didn't make that up. This is on CNET News. An actual glow-in-the-dark kitty. He's glowing green. Now, this is actually benign. It's some kind of Angora cat that they're fooling around with some type of genes that'll make it glow. But relatively to some of the others, this is kind of benign, a glow-in-the-dark kitty. But it's not stuff some little Asian guy is going to be cooking up. Who's doing this stuff? Does it have any history with our enemy? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It's Marduk's dragon. It's right out of the Bible. It's right out of mythology. It's the stuff they do. It's what they're into. Why? I don't know. They're insane. They're insane. But there is a circumstantial evidence that I could present just with this alone, that at the top, when you have these royal elements saying they're related to El Shaddu or El Shaddai, whatever you want to call Marduk, I don't care. They say they're related to the great prince, the fallen angel. Well, they're doing the same stuff. They believe it, at least, enough to fund the research, because we ain't funding it, and we ain't cooking this stuff up. You're not going to sit at some camp, you're not going to be out camping, sitting at some fireplace, and have some little white rabbit say, oh, I want to make a glow-in-the-dark kitty when I grow up. It's not going to happen. We don't do that. It doesn't work that way. It's crazy stuff. It's crazy stuff. Is there a case in another area? Well, we're going to go in another area next. I'm going to be back with you, and we're going to go in another area. I could spend all day on this stuff. I could spend all day on talking about the Old Testament or what our enemy says are related to. I could spend all day on chimeras. They're shoving it down your throat. I could spend all day on this, and I could spend all day on the next section. I'm going to make this short. I'm going to try to get to the point. You can do your own homework and come to your own conclusions, but I can only make a circumstantial evidence that something like that would be here with us. But we can make a very strong circumstantial evidence that the people at the top believe that they're related to this. They believe that they're related to these guys, for whatever it's worth. And of course, last but not least, we have our enemy trying to make us into something chimerical and who knows what else. Who knows what else they have planned, but they want to blend it to humanity. Especially in white countries. They are absolutely positively insane. And this is, of course, Team Pink Rabbit. And most of this comes down from up high. It's not in your local synagogue. It's not in your local church. But yet, at the same time, it's something behind them. Something well behind them cooking up all this stuff. Something else that comes out in mythology, if you're reading the Odyssey or Iliad, I don't care if you're reading the Aztec Codexes, you're dealing with giants and you're dealing with cannibalism. Our enemy is heavily associated with cannibalism. They're always eating us. It's pretty strange stuff. We don't have any incidences of pink rabbits eating white rabbits. at least not too much. And the question always becomes, well, they're associated with chimerical. We see that stuff. That's a pretty good circumstantial evidence that they believe it. But, you know, they're also famous for cannibalism. Why isn't there cannibalism, Horace? Well, you're not looking in the right area. We got ourselves nouveau cannibalism. Nouveau cannibalism. What happens if you have a salmon infused with human genes? And then that salmon becomes, well, your big salmon steak at dinner. Well, you're eating a salmon with human DNA. You're eating modern cannibalism, nouveau cannibalism, new cannibalism. What happens when you have, USDA backs production of rice with human genes? What happens when you do that? That's something you see around the campfire every day. One little white rabbit says, you know, I want to grow up to be an astronaut. Second little white rabbit says, well, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to fight white rabbit genocide. Third little white rabbit says, you know, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to modify rice, little rice, to have human genes, and we're going to create nouveau cannibalism. We're going to eat people, and no one will know we're eating people. Yeah, cool. Yeah, you hear that every day, don't you? This is insane stuff. I can't make this stuff up. This is Washington Post. USDA backs production of rice with human genes. And some of it sounds relatively benign, but no one knows the results of doing all this crazy modified food. Just recently in China, and this stuff has also come up far. One of the reasons I like the Far East, one of the reasons I like the East Asians, is because when they do something, they don't tell us. In Anglosphere, they tell us when it's too late. You know, they have 150 animal-human hybrids. Oh, and we've been growing them for the past so many years. The Chinese do tell us stuff when they really do it. And then one in this, and this one, this is not something you can make up. They're combining human DNA and Jell-O. Human DNA to make Jell-O. And when you get into the Chinese food engineering, and the Chinese really have no rules, so the pink rabbits have went wild in some elements in China. You know, and it takes a lot of money to cook crazy stuff up like this. It takes a lot of imagination, and it ain't us. We ain't associated with that stuff. So there is cannibalism. It's just not going in the way we think. We're not dealing with giants eating Odysseus. You know, the big cyclops eats Odysseus. We're not dealing, or tries to eat Odysseus and eats his little buddies. We're not dealing with anything conventional. We're dealing with some very strange stuff. And in mythology all over the world, our enemy is always associated with cannibalism. And, of course, they are at it again. They're just not at it in a way. They're not at it like their African counterparts, where they're just eating people, basically eating, you know, opening up an enemy and eating their liver. They're not doing that, at least not yet. They are infusing DNA, human DNA, in stuff and creating some weird things. I could spend all day on this. All you have to do is look it up. All you have to do is do your time on it. And you'll come to some strange conclusions. They're not announcing it all over the place, unless you're an Asian. Some of these Asian research groups are talking about all kinds of stuff. Modify cows to produce human breast milk. No one knows the effect of doing all this stuff. No one knows what the effects of modifying food. It's like you have a diseased group of rabbits out of control on this planet, and it's Team Pink Rabbit. It's absolutely positively insane. Absolutely positively insane. And no one knows where they're going with it other than a New World Order. And of course, one of the famous episodes, let me wrap up this part. And let me talk about a famous giant episode in South America, because I'm going to get a lot of emails because I said our enemy says they're not gray aliens, and there's been, they shove gray aliens down everyone's throat. Well, there's a connection between many people believe them and cannibalism and giants. I'll go into it this way. I can actually read it to you. It actually makes one of Dr. Farrell's books, his latest book, Grid of the Gods, which has some very interesting white rabbit stuff in it. Some interesting stuff about our enemy. But what the gray alien people don't understand, how does it make mythology? Well, in Aztec mythology, it talks about a giant eating people. And when they snare the giant, old Toltecs, what is eating the people? I'll read it from you. This is from one of the Aztecs codex. And this codex is generally viewed not as an allegory. It's like a written record of what was going on at that time. So they're trying to describe something going on that, well, it's pretty difficult to describe. Old Toltecs, what is eating the people? They snared it. They captured it. So it's like a real-time commentary. They're capturing this thing. And what they captured was a bearded boy. And when it talks about this stuff, it talks about an ash man, an ash bundle man, a giant, and then a beardless boy. They capture a giant, and then they got themselves a beardless boy. And my comment on this is that you're dealing with another case of giants. You're dealing with reference to giants, these tribes of giants. Whether you get into the biblical Rephaim or whatever you want to call them. I mean, these are all puns dealing with giants. In South America, you have an interesting incidence with these beardless boys. They're capturing giants. Why? Because the giants are trying to eat people. And, you know, the giants are not foolproof. They can be killed. In our mythology, they get killed all the time. We got skeletons for some of these giants, but then you got these beardless boys. My commentary on what the beardless boys and the link to the gray aliens. Well, the beardless boys, when they're killed, they have no insides and no bloods. No blood. They're called ash bundle men, beardless boys, which is weird because little boys don't have beards anyways. What on earth are they referring to? And is widely believed that this is where the gray alien phenomenon really comes in. People think that that's what they're dealing with, these little gray aliens. But the people that believe that, the people that are best at interpreting the myth, say if they're dealing with that gray alien thing, that that's not an alien at all. You're not dealing with an alien at all. You're dealing with because it doesn't have anything inside, it doesn't have anything, it doesn't have any blood, and when they open it up, it kills them based on some type of toxicity. Then it stinks, and whoever smells it dies from it. Well, it gives off some type, you know, it's like some type of technology that you kill it, and it kills everything in the area or something like that just based on the toxicity. And you can read about this in Grid of the Gods. It's right out of one of the Aztec codexes. And this description of this thing, and it, I guess you could say it's an allegory, but this actually is believed to have happened. The best minds in interpreting this stuff don't interpret it as a gray alien at all in the conventional sense. If you're dealing with a little gray as a beardless boy, you're not dealing with an alien at all. You're dealing with something without inside, something without heart. Without a heart, without anything going on, which when you kill it, you kill everything in the area. And you want to crack this, you want to crack the beardless boys of South America, well, you're going to have to crack the little gray things, so-called aliens, you're going to have to crack Lucifer. Because the brightest minds on these beardless boys, what they believe is you're dealing with a paleo-ancient civilization, once again. It goes down and it has some serious artificial technology. It has some serious little robots, bio-designed robots. Bio-designed artificial intelligence. You got Lucifer and you got his little angels. And these little angels are those little grays. These little fallen angels of some sort. They're little, in other words, they're little robots. They're little robots. And why would they be inside a giant? Or why would they go to kill a giant and they get a beardless boy? What's going on with this thing? Well, that's the endless question. But you got to crack Lucifer. The people that believe that the beardless boys were these little gray things, and these little gray things are around, always believe in the Louis, in the sci-fi Louis, that Lucifer is in fact a piece of artificial intelligence gone wild. He's a Terminator, a big ball of mercury that can come into our frequency and transform into things, that lost his crown, and these little guys are his helpers. It's real crazy. Yeah, it's just crazy as bringing mythology to life. But yeah, they're heavily associated with cannibalism. All I can do is simplify it and say that this side is heavily associated with cannibalism. I don't care if you read about it in the Iliad, you read about the sons of Poseidon trying to eat us. I don't care if you read in South America about the beardless boys. But that is some very strange stuff. Yeah, I know. But before I get emails saying, well, you know, the gray aliens this and the gray aliens that and the Aztec code, I understand all that, but they're not aliens at all. They're from below the earth and they're in an ancient base. The people that believe this believe that they're in some base, and we're not dealing with nutballs that believe this. We're dealing with people that crack the mythologies. There's a lot of sightings of these things. I assume it's something out of World War II, some type of propaganda, but who knows? It could be the sci-fi Louis. Some piece of artificial intelligence my race created long, long ago that come back to bite us. I don't know that, but I don't know anyone that thinks they're aliens that I respect. The only thing they could be is some type of AI, artificial intelligence, from a paleo-ancient civilization. And you got the devil and his little helpers. Crazy stuff. Why them and giants? Well, our enemy is always associated with giants. Little gray guys cruise around inside of them, I guess. I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. This stuff is much stranger than fiction, and if any of it's true, we can just throw out everything we know, and it would be stranger than anything we could imagine, and whoever gets here would have to wipe them all out and then explain it to us, because I have no idea. I can only go in the direction, but your enemy is always, we can keep it simple, your enemy is always associated with cannibalism. And they're up to it again, just not in the way you think. They got nouveau cannibalism going. We're going to be eating steaks that are part human. Yeah, cool, man. We're going to eat your rice, and your rice has human DNA, and you're a modern cannibal. Yeah, fascinating stuff. Not stuff we cook up, not stuff we're interested in doing, not stuff we normally do or normally even dream up, but it's something you need to get your mind around. You can do all your own research, homework, and come to your own conclusions. Pretty confident you'll come to the conclusions that I don't know if something's here. I don't know that one way or another. Christians would believe they're here. Yeah, Christians would believe the devil and his dark angels are here, that's for sure. I have no reason to disagree with that. I couldn't prove it or disprove it. But I can tell you this right now, that our enemy at the top believes are related to these wild animals. Team Pink Rabbit believes are related to the Red Hippopotamus and all his crew. And they are acting out the part. They are acting out the part. Consciously, subconsciously, I don't know. But it ain't us doing it. Our scientists are researching it, sure. The Chinese scientists are doing some very crazy stuff, but they ain't exactly cooking up the potion. Someone's giving them stuff to do. Someone's paying the bill, because this stuff is not cheap. It's not cheap to put human DNA in rice. It's not cheap, and it's not stuff that we come up with. I would defy anyone sitting around with a bunch of little white rabbits to ask them questions to see if they come up with something like this off the top of their head. Probably not. If you're in a camp, around a campfire, and they're cooking up stuff like this, you're in Camp Pink Rabbit. No doubt about it. This is crazy, crazy stuff. And the cloning seems to have been some type of gateway. It's like a gateway drug for pink rabbits. Our race, cloning, well, you know, maybe you're going to replace a kid's arm. Kid got his arm tore off. Replace an arm, clone an arm, put it on. Okay, fine. Big deal. It doesn't sound, it's just science. But when you start talking about some of this other stuff, and where they went with it. And, you know, hindsight vision is always 20/20 because it lends itself to the truth. Where they went with it is some very strange areas, straight out of mythology, straight out of their mythology, straight out of our enemy, what they're like, what they're up to, what they like and dislike. And that's all I can tell you. And we're going to keep going. We're going to do some question and answers. And I'll keep coming back to these two interesting books, Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men, and Grit of the Gods, because it has some fascinating mythological stuff that hasn't surfaced in a long, long time about the white gods. I'm going to briefly go over a couple books since I keep you guys up to date on Dr. Farrell's work, the author of the Crazy Pyramid books. He's written a couple of interesting books for anyone. If you've read his books before and they kind of lose you from time to time, and then you listen to his talks afterwards on The Bite Show, you would certainly be interested in these. Because these, he's getting down to the nitty-gritty. Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men. And if you see the front cover, you're going to see an oblong-shaped head. That's an actual real skull. He's introducing his readers to what he really thinks is going on. Some of the interesting parts of the book, it starts out in, he covers a lot of ground in it, but it has a lot of interesting vignettes in Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men. One of the first parts is basically like a March of the Titans on steroids. It's something, he talks about the ancient sexagesimal system of ancient Sumeria. He talks about a link between the megalithic yard. Many people listening to this have watched the History Channel, Discovery Channel on all these ancient builders. Well, the challenge comes in is that there's a standard unit of measure between a lot of these, it's called the megalithic yard. And I won't go into all the details. People can read the book and listen to his talk. That would be a podcast in itself. But basically, to make a long story short, ancient Egypt, Greece, the British Isles, all these ancient Egypt as well, the modern even metric system, are all rooted in these ancient measuring systems. In other words, there's a mathematical link between them. And this was proven, I want to say, by some British surveyor. He talks about Thomas Jefferson talking about different elements of the megalithic yard. But basically, let's say, for instance, we have an ancient civilization go down. And this is not, this is proven, this is not something you're going to see on the History Channel, but all these measuring systems are related to a sexagesimal system of ancient Sumer. There's a link, a mathematical, defined mathematical link. And there's a connection to the megalithic yard. What are the odds of that being random? Well, the odds of it being random, just let me give you an idea. I have only one degree in this world. I have a bachelor's of science in something. And a bachelor's of science in my particular field is actually kind of rare. The reason it's called a bachelor's of science is because I had to take some amount of math and I had to take a lot of statistics. Now, although I was not, I think I graduated with honors at the time, but yeah, that would surprise some people, wouldn't it, from that particular university. But one thing I remember about statistics, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics. And you can manipulate things, which is kind of common sense. But one thing, once you start seeing a pattern emerge, every time that a pattern goes one step further, in other words, let's say Sumer and Egypt have the same measuring system. Well, you might be able to, the odds are against it being random, but there is probabilities for such a thing. Once you start saying, there's a link between ancient Greece, once you start adding there's a link between the ancient megalithic yard, there's a link between the British Isles. Every time you make another connection, there are probabilities for it all being random. But the probabilities become astronomical. the probabilities become astronomical. It's kind of like driving down the road. You're driving down the road and you see a big junkyard. All these rabbits like their junkyards. Some white rabbits like a lot of junk. But they got a big junkyard. Huge junkyard. All these old cars and everything else. Then you're driving down the street. The 2 weeks later, all of a sudden, the junkyard is now a junk carrot food restaurant. The odds of this being random, the odds of the, let's call it the March of the Titans on steroids. March of the Titans refers to a famous white nationalist epic, epic novel. The odds of all those connections being just random are the same odds as a junkyard spontaneously combusting into a junk food restaurant. There are probabilities for those. I can give you probabilities, but it would be much, much easier just to say someone came around, removed the junkyard at breakneck speed, and then built a junk food restaurant. In other words, something intelligent, something human got involved. You can't really have a link. You can't build something, by the way, without having a measuring system. We don't even think about this in Western civilization. You can't build something without a measuring system. And you certainly can't build stuff in various different places of the world, hundreds if not thousands of miles away, and have a measuring system, a link to those measuring systems, a definable mathematical link, and not have some elite there guiding it. There has to be something going on. And he talks about this about 10,000 years ago. Someone showed up, and there's a link between all these ancient measuring systems. Very fascinating stuff. Very fascinating stuff. Including the modern metric system has links to the sexagesimal system of ancient Sumer. You know, and you got the double manna, and you can read the book. It's interesting. Read the book, and if you get lost, listen to his talks on it. It'll make you scratch your melon. If you've ever read March of the Titans, which talks about all these ancient civilizations being white, well, he's starting to go into that because it's by and large true. Now, what we don't know is no one's actually the same surveyor that figured all this out did not actually go around the world to the Indo Valley and everywhere else. And we'll get to that when I go over the grid of the gods, but by and large, there's a link believed between every ancient, all the ancient buildings of the planet, to, by and large, megalithic yard and the sexagesimal system to Sumer on some level. It is widely believed, although it's only been proven from the British Isles to the Greek, to the modern metric system, to the ancient Egyptians and ancient Sumerians. You know, it's kind of common sense. Let's say America and Western civilization, all in total, even the Russian civilization, would go under. Tomorrow morning, it just goes under. Well, we would have to step up and rebuild. But to rebuild something, you know, if I want, I want a 2x4, or I want so many yards of this, you know, you got to have a system of measurement to do that. Or, you know, you can't ship lumber from North America to Europe or whatever. You're going to have to know how to measure things. So it's kind of common sense. How did all the ancient buildings get built without some type of measuring system? Well, they had a measuring system, and they were all linked. And not only linked, but disconnected in a way that where you had to kind of figure it out. It is fascinating stuff. Now, where he goes out of the ring, and I've been asked direct questions about this, you see, he starts on a paleo-ancient civilization. You know, there's a paleo-ancient civilization spreading into this solar system, all across the solar system, several planets. And that erupts in war. What he does is he starts trying to put that together from the planet out. Now, the Richard Hoagland, he's a famous name, Face on Mars, you can look him up. He starts out in the solar system and says there was a paleo-ancient civilization and starts trying to put it together by all this stuff I can't see. But one thing they've come across, and this is the one that he mentions with the Sumerian mathematics, because it's common sense. If there were a paleo-ancient civilization, if mythology was right, if that is across this whole entire solar system, there would have to be remnants left on this planet, and there could be. There would have to be remnants, obviously, stretched across the solar system. And common sense would dictate, based on what I just told you, they would have to correspond mathematically to some type of measuring system. How are you going to build it? Well, some of the stuff that corresponds to the sexagesimal system of Sumer, which sounds kind of sexy, sexagesimal system, is Iapetus. And Iapetus is a famous Greek name. We get into everything above your head is named after our mythology. But Iapetus, not just a few different mathematical equations. Iapetus is a satellite around Saturn, actually. A moon with a view, it's called. The Cassini took images of it. The famous, if you follow the Cassini, I think it was from NASA, out there taking pictures of things. And I'm not prepared to say what they're saying, that it corresponds to the sexagesimal system in ancient Sumeria perfectly, but it's enough to even for me to question it, simply because the mathematics of the thing are known by every, if you study astrophysics or if you're into astronomy, you know the inclination, that you know the rotations of a satellite. We know the size of the satellites. That's not open to debate. When Richard C. Hoagland sees a face on Mars, that's open to debate. So if you're saying this corresponds to the Sumerian sexagesimal system, well, that's open to debate because I can't see the damn face to begin with. But a satellite, I know it's there. I know Iapetus is there. I know what the mathematics behind it, because that is basic science. I'm not prepared to give an opinion out of right now, but it is eye-opening. It is eye-opening. Everything about the thing, this satellite, corresponds to the sexagesimal system of ancient Sumer, including its rotation around Saturn. What are the odds of that being random? Well, if the numbers are correct, I'm going to have to look into it more, but if the numbers are correct, it could be a smoking gun, potentially. It would be the first I've seen to a smoking gun to a paleo-ancient civilization that stretched across the solar system. Because you cannot have everything on this planet, or at least everything we know of in Western civilization, or anything supposedly linked to Western civilization, corresponding to a sexagesimal system of ancient Sumer. You cannot have that, even corresponding to the modern metric system of Europe. You cannot have that just show up in space randomly. I mean, we can, but then you're getting into junkyards spontaneously combusting and reassembling themselves into junk food places. The odds, the probabilities of that happening are so astronomical, it's insane. So it's one to watch. It could be a smoking gun. I don't know. Now the question would be: Are the Phobos, Deimos, are all these satellites around Mars corresponding to the sexagesimal system? I don't know. I'm starting to become suspicious. This is the first time I've ever seen anyone deliver a smoking gun. I've seen all Hoagland stuff, and I understood what he was doing. I just couldn't actually see it. But this one and the mathematics behind it are something to look at, because it doesn't correspond in a random nature, just like, oh, the circumference may correspond to the double mana or something like that, all these holy numbers of the sexagesimal system. We're talking about everything about it has a potential to correspond. So what's one to watch? Should be interesting. I don't know where it's going. I just know the direction. It's pretty crazy stuff. But it is this book, Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men, is something. Most of you reading it won't, you know, it's one of those type of books where sometimes we don't know what we're reading until we hear him talk about it. But this is the direction I thought he would go 2 years ago. I mean, when I first started talking about the guy, when I first started reading it, I knew the direction he was going to go from Earth out. I didn't know how he was going to approach it, and he has a very eclectic approach. But I also knew that to do it, he's going to have to be honest with you about the Old Testament, about the Jew God. He's not what he says he is. Whoever shows up here, and what the case he's making is that a group of elites show up here at least 10,000 BC. They build things. Well, they have a standard measuring system. You can't have a standard measuring system even from the British Isles to Sumer, you just can't have that without having a group of elites there saying, without Horus the Avenger being there calling his buddy in Sumer from, you know, or calling the British Isles from Egypt and saying, hey, this is the measuring system we're going to use. You just can't have that. It's not possible. It's not mathematically possible. It's kind of common sense. It's interesting stuff. And then, of course, he transitions in the part that I thought he was going to do when he starts smacking the Jew God. I shouldn't say the God of the Talmud, the one that handed down the Talmud. You're dealing with, although he doesn't say it's Moses directly, Moses is Akhenaten. Well, he does say Moses. He doesn't say Moses Akhenaten. We've went down this road. It's a third rail of speculation. And he hammers it. He hammers it home. One of the most interesting parts of this is he talks about the technology is a special revelation. He talks about the beat frequencies of the brain. And this is something, as American, I did not know. I knew that they could chip you. They could chip us and put voices in our heads. But if you peg the beat frequency of the brain, you can put voices in people's heads. And in America, anyone that does their homework is going to quickly realize, or anyone that has a memory, that we've had several high-profile murders where someone heard the devil say them do it or God tells them to do it. And he talks about a case of David Koresh, the Branch Davidians. And the FBI at the time went to the foremost expert on this in the world was in the Soviet Union, putting voices in heads. They had pegged the beat frequency of the brain. And it is a fascinating case. He delivers all his sources. And David Koresh, the FBI flew in some expert from the Soviet Union, this scientist. And they wanted him to put voices in their heads to try to get them out of there. And he said, I won't do it, because if I put the voice of God in their heads, they're going to all commit suicide. He said, this stuff is dangerous stuff. And it is the wildest stuff I've ever read about. And all his sources are revealed. I've never read any of these stories. But it makes you think. In other words, they have that type of technology is out there running around. One morning you may get up and some world leader may come on the stage in the very near future. And everyone may hear him without hearing him. That technology is out there. That's what you need to know. And his sources are revealed. This isn't just something he's making up. This is wild stuff. It's wild, wild stuff. And he talks about all the religions, and religion is defined by him as something where something is revealed. Some angel shows up and speaks to you, so on and so forth. And let's face it, the big three religions are full of this type of stuff. So is Buddhism, by the way. So are many of the others. But Hinduism would not be a religion to him because it wasn't nothing revealed. And then, of course, once something is revealed, we have a lot of murder and mayhem. Even though the principles behind many of the religions may be benign, they end up in a lot of murder and mayhem. He goes on to talk about this, and he talks about the actual Old Testament and what's really going on there, the third rail speculation. I've already touched on it. He talks on the potential of using modern weapons. In other words, a group of elites showed up 10,000 BC. Another group of elites, the revolting faction, come out, I don't know, a few thousand years ago, 2500 BC or whenever the Old Testament's happening, that's when they show up. And they have enough technology to try to get their game going. Because God forbid you don't rebuild your weapon systems and the other side comes back. Because the other side comes back and you haven't rebuilt and you're not ready to fight God, you're doomed. So they come out and they have some sophisticated technology. It would be identical, let's say, a group of white nationalists. Let's say we could actually live, they opened up, and they're already talking about doing this. We had life extension technologies and we could live, let's say, I don't know, 7,000, 8,000, 10,000, or 20,000 years. Let's say in theory. Let's say in theory our bodies couldn't wear out. We had a way to get around life extension. Some type of life extension system. Even if it were 3,000 years, we could run a serious game on people. When you look at someone like anyone in many of the prolific writers in white nationalism, none of them are over 100. Imagine they could live to be a few thousand years old. Imagine the game we could run on people. Imagine if there were a big disaster, we went to a few nice underground bunkers, and there's all kinds of them on this planet right now. We preserved a core pieces of our technology, and then we just came out, start getting things going. We could live so many thousands of years, and we were running a racket. And we could run a racket. I mean, that is just common sense, even with just Black Hawk helicopters and just modern technology. If we just preserve that and how to make it, and underground bunkers and some underground factories, we would be A-okay. We would have a step on anything, right? Interesting. And then they introduce their system. Well, their system is conflict and scarcity. And the reason they're doing it, and the reason everything's about money, is because they got to rebuild their technology. So this is the case he's starting to make in the Old Testament. He just slams. He slams. Oh, Yahwaddle. I mean, saying the God of the Old Testament is the same demon that introduced human sacrifice in South America. I'm an anti-Semite, but that's good stuff. Well, the problem is that he actually is someone who has a doctorate in patristics, so he can back up what he says. I mean, this is just some loon saying it. And now you know why you can't get Grid of the Gods from Amazon. Yeah, I had to order Grid of the Gods from the publisher or someone along those lines simply because Amazon won't release it. He came out with Gene Shon's Monsters and Men, and he's getting the poor Dr. Kevin McDonald treatment. Actually, he's getting the silent treatment. He's getting the White Rabbit treatment. They're not exactly harassing him, but they know what he's saying. And then he names them, and I've already went through this in this podcast, but it is one to read, and he has to be supported now. He has to be supported now because he's taking on my enemy's mythology. He's taking on their nationalism. And he's beating the hell out of them. I mean, it's kind of wild stuff. And he's basically overlaying modern technology, and like I said, you got psychic driving, Stockholm Syndrome, and reverse depattering all in the Old Testament. Yeah, like I said, you know, a group of elites come out and they're using modern psychological manipulation techniques and modern technology. Well, it's interesting. Interesting theory. And then he has elites with agendas. He talks about the genome wars. He talks about the Y chromosomes. We've kind of talked about that already. The difference, of course, between when we get into our elites, you're dealing with the Talmud is simply a modus operandi. It produces a mindset that they're going for based on scarcity. And within that elite, within Pink Rabbits, we have the group over running over there in Israel who they test for down maternal lines. Then we have the elitesters, the groups I look at, what they claim cannot be tested for in such a fashion. What they claim can only be tested for through males. I mean, when you go to Israel, they can test for that maternal link down male or female. What the elitesters claim, what the George W. Bush claims, these claims at the top of Western civilization, these claims, what we're dealing with is a group group within the group. We're dealing, I don't know whether the maternal line is a qualifier and the Y chromosome is the big deal, but the Y chromosome is a big deal. Or if they're two separate groups completely, I don't really know that. It's a group within a group. We have a group waging war by deception based on what they say. Now, is it true? I hope so. I hope so. I hope these people are related to who they say they're related to. I really do. Because it'll be curtains for them in the near future. We didn't witness royal weddings. We witnessed world funerals. That's the way it would work. And who knows what twists and turns it would take if any of this were true. He talks about the genome wars. He talks about the Anunnaki, basically the Olympians, how they made man. He talks about the potential for what I call the dual hypothesis, that they land it twice, they upgrade it Neanderthal to Cro-Magnon, and then they zip Cro-Magnon to white rabbits. And some other, maybe East Asians or whatever. There's a couple of different varieties probably. That's where you get the races of the world somehow. Then he talks about... I don't know if that's true. There's a lot of contradictions. On one side of the equation, they say there's no traces between modern Europeans and Neanderthals. The other side of the equation, they say there are. I don't know how this is going to end up. I don't know. I can only point to the direction. This stuff gets pretty crazy. I'm very suspicious of the Neanderthal stuff. Something doesn't make sense to me. There shouldn't be all these contradictions. And the Germans let something big slip, as I pointed out to in more than a couple podcasts. So what you're talking about is genetic engineering. Well, you ask questions. Does this sound like creationism? Is it intelligent design? You can just throw everything we know out the window if any of this is true. We like to conform things like this into ideals and isms we've already heard about. In reality, what you're dealing with is a group with outrageous knowledge of evolution and pushing evolution forward. That doesn't necessarily prove Darwin's theory of natural selection. That doesn't necessarily prove anything we know. It sort of sounds like intelligent design, but no, it's not. They're pushing evolution. It sort of sounds like creation. They're not creating anything. Even the Bible, let us make man in our image and our likeness. They're not creating something. They're making something. You know, I mean, if Harry Potter creates a cake, he waves his magic wand. Poof, magic. If Harry Potter takes Betty Crocker, puts it together, well, Harry Potter he's making something. He's taking the ingredients and making something. That's not the same thing. This is pretty much just, it sheds light on things, but heaven help us if it's true. He talks about the potential of a group out there, somewhere in the world, having patents potentially on white rabbits. he speculates down these lines. It's wild, wild stuff. If you read the book, listen to what he has to say on the Byte Show and send them, if you download those MP3s on the Byte Show, make sure you send them a few dollars. Those aren't free. And they're not running White Rabbit Radio, giving stuff away. They actually have to, they don't have a budget to give everything away, but send them a small donation, if you really like that stuff. But he's making serious contributions. Do I agree with him that white rabbits look messed up, Europeans look messed up? Don't know if that's the right way to put it. What it does look like when you get into Europeans or Indo-Europeans, and everyone looks at it, it just doesn't show up on TV. We have a variety of different medical conditions that we've always gotten around it. we've always gotten around them through medical science and medical technology. Most of us are even unaware of the racial differences in medicine. They're huge. Every group has a weakness racially, medically speaking. Africans have serious heart challenges. But white rabbits have a lot of unique conditions and that we've gotten around through science. It looks like something's up with us. Messed up isn't the right word. It looks like something's up. Most believe that it just doesn't make sense. You have the oldest blood type known to humankind. The oldest blood type known to humanity in what is thought to be the youngest race. It doesn't make any sense. Nothing makes any sense about European genetics. Nothing. It blows everything out of the water. And it has something to do with Y chromosomes. It has something to do with those ancient fathers. And he gets into them, the 10 ancient fathers and the ancient mothers. All Europeans are related to ancient mothers, and they're related to, like, I think, 7 ancient mothers. 6 are indigenous to Europe. The 7th came from the Middle East somewhere. I think the 7th would have been a big deal, maybe from some ancient pre-dynastic Egypt or something. Who knows? The 10 fathers, well, that's a big question. We know all about the mothers. Tell us all about the fathers, the Y chromosomes. That's the question. He goes into all this. He does a very, very good job. He talks about the Chinese I Ching. Some of this paleo-ancient civilization, some of this stuff, the Indo Valley, that came out of the Indo Valley, all that different paleo-ancient stuff from the other side of the world, some of the ancient stuff is better preserved in the East than it is in the West. In the West, it's been glossed over and fooled with. It's one of the reasons the Nazis were running around in Tibet. They're running around all over there. They believed that these guys were here, the white gods, and they were running around here building everything. Now, in the next book, he talks about the white gods running around building everything. The next book I'm going to go into, I'm going to give you an overview of the Grid of the Gods. And that's another epic one, because he is actually talking about... I'll get to that in a minute. The Grid of Gods is an interesting book. Its name says it all. He's basically, and I haven't read the whole thing twice with all the footnotes and listened to what he's coming up to speed on, but it starts with basically the facts behind the first nuclear bombs dropped on this planet, the fact that they were a lot more powerful than they should have been based on just the nuclear technology, and they were tapping into something. And then he goes into geopolitical geomancy, why the Nazis were looking to control certain points on the map. It's fascinating stuff. It's one of the best overviews of that I've ever really read in one small concise chapter or two chapters, whichever it is. He talks about how the Nazis are doing that. You might remember de Glacka, the particular Bell experiment. One thing he didn't go into, which I know he can go into and probably will, is why that was where it was on the map in Europe, that experiment, what they were doing, and why they did it when they did it. That also has everything to do with the grid. They were looking to utilize an energy that most of us, that they thought was beyond our senses and all that other type of stuff. As well as other things. I've talked about de Glacka before. That's something to come up to speed with. Something to come up to speed on if you haven't heard the whole podcast. But then he goes into all the different ancient monuments on this planet. And all the ancient monuments on this planet are... I'll read you an excerpt. And at Angkor Wat, as at Stonehenge, Giza, Teotihuacan, and so many other places on the world grid, we are confronted with vast structures, temples, pyramids, monuments, all seemingly laid out in correlation with some astronomical alignment, and all seemingly related to each other. At Angkor Wat's placement at a certain longitude east of Giza Prime Meridian testifies. This is Hancock and, I don't know how to pronounce this word, F-A-I-I-A, Faya maybe, state. It's an individual. It's clearly suggestive of an activity of hidden players, of a hidden elite or elites. We have had the eerie sense of stumbling across the fragments of a strange and shadowy archaic master game, a game on a planetary scale that ran for thousands of years and appears to have been played out in 4 principal dimensions. Then he goes on to lay out this game. In other words, most of what we see are different pyramids and different monuments on this planet. The fascinating thing is, most of them are related to each other. Most of them have various things in common that the people thousands of miles away could not have just randomly built. And then he's speculating on who. And who, of course, is the famous the famous Semshu Hor, or the followers of Horus, who went across the planet after a great disaster and built everything. One of the challenges with this is, of course, some of these things are built thousands of years apart, and some of them aren't even built but a couple thousand years ago or 1,500 years ago. And that's one of the problems. The problem is the concept of time itself, and that goes into the physics they may be using. And that's another conversation that he starts going into. One of the things he alludes to in Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men is why the disparity in time. If you have a giant flood 500,000 years ago, you have these disasters that are millions of years apart or tens of thousands of years apart. You have a group of elites basically coming in 10,000 BC, another one 20-some hundred BC. How are they surviving this? Where are they coming from? All that other type of interesting stuff. But time would be another... the answer to the time riddle would be in the physics itself, which is kind of interesting. But he talks about the followers of Horus, which is kind of interesting. What some would label as a quote-unquote good elite. You know, there's the good ones and the bad ones. There's the ones that put down the bad ones in the great cosmic war. Basically, we're talking about it. There's two sides. There's Zeus, there's Kronos. You know, and he's talking about these two different elites, but he's talking about all these different things built across the planet. And some of the stuff in the book is rather fascinating. For instance, most of us have heard of Easter Island, all the strange stuff on Easter Island. He compares the Rongo Rongo script of Easter Island to the Indu Valley. He's talking about most of everything coming out of Indu Valley after some huge disaster. And the disaster was caused by Viracocha and his death rays. He had to put down a group. We've talked about this before. Viracocha is, of course, Zeus. God, whatever you want to call him. Trust me, we wouldn't be able to know the difference. And he has all kinds of fascinating stuff in here. I'll read you another excerpt. We now have an odd constellation of facts indicating relationship between whatever high civilization was behind the ruins of Pumapunku, which is in South America, Easter Island, and the Indu Valley, among which are mythological parallels between the Viracocha and the gods of the rest of the world, like Zeus, whatever. Odin, Osiris, you know, one and the same. The similarity of construction methods between Easter Island and Teotihuacan and Pumapunku, and on the one hand, and the Rongo Rongo script connecting it to the Indo Valley on the other. And then he goes on to speculate on why all this strange stuff is going on and the previous civilization, and he talks about one of the things that I find fascinating about this book is it's the first time in modern, by a modern scholar, someone that actually, you know, he has a degree in patristics from Oxford, he's not some idiot, everything's sourced, this isn't just someone putting out, isn't just someone speculating down the crazy path, he's speculating with sources. One of the fascinating parts of this book is when he talks about the followers of Horus, the Hemshu Hor, Semshu Hor, I believe it's pronounced. And he talks about around the world and how they were seen, and I want to read this to you. Like other spots on the grid, Nan Maidel and the wider Polynesian culture also has its traditions associated with certain sites, and in this case, two traditions interest us, like Easter Island, where the giant Maui... Maui head statues were said to have been moved by themselves or by some mysterious force called mana. The stone blocks of the pyramids at Nan Maidel, weighing several tons, were said to have been moved by or raised by magic. The second tradition, however, brings us in a stark relief yet another mystery associated with the grid. Viracocha, the sun god, whom we previously encountered, was also the great civilizer god of the Incas and was said to be white-skinned, bearded, and blue-eyed. As we shall discover in the next two chapters, the same claim is made for the civilizing god of the Mayans, the Aztec, Kukulcan, Quetzalcoatl. The Polynesians, as many other Asian peoples, have similar traditions. After the first European missionaries arrived in the islands, they discovered that the Polynesians referred to themselves as Aomata, a term that simply meant humans, but the Europeans were called Matang, M-A-T-A-N-G, which meant men from the land of the gods. Other Polynesians referred to the white missionaries as golden-haired children of the Tongariro, the god who, according to their traditions, came a millennia before as a teacher and a civilizer. The ideal is repeated in the Japanese legend of the ancient Yamamoto, the white people who supposedly came to Japan teaching civilization in the legends In the legends of the Hopi tribe in North America, and even in the Hindu epic, the Ramayana. But if the tradition is so strong and so important and so common, then we cannot assume that it wasn't somehow anchored in reality. So basically, he's going into a few things that most aren't going to hear on the Discovery Channel or the History Channel. That there were a group of white people on this planet. They were a little bit bigger than us, and some of them had some outrageous technology that went around building a lot of stuff. And then they left. This is fascinating stuff, and just like he speculates on who's related to them in Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men. And this is a book, for his sources alone, that's kind of an interesting book. And I can't really render a whole opinion. I'm not doing it justice at all. Because he talks about certain areas of physics. He talks about why the different temples are built a certain way. You know, all these temples, you go into Angkor Wat, some of the different temples in the Indus Valley are some of the different pointy temples in the Asian area, in the Asian region of the planet. They look totally different than what we would think of as some of the different temples found in, let's say, some of the different pyramids/temples found in Egypt. They look different than the pyramids found in South America. But yet at the same time, there's a certain principle that prevails through them, or through most of them. And it's a fascinating read, or it's proving fascinating so far. This one gets a little more complicated than his average book, but it also has some nuggets in there. He should just write a whole book on the white gods and the different people in history that have seen the white gods. That would probably be a real bestseller. But one of the more interesting things he goes into, which is pretty rare, is the Nabta Playa. Nabta Playa, for those that don't know, that's Nabta Playa. And that is found in Egypt. It's Egypt's Sonhen. It's from 16,000 B.C. And he starts speculating where these white, quote-unquote, gods are coming from. And he's not the first to do it, but he does so in an interesting way. And he's talking about Nabta Playa. Nabta Playa is something that looks like an Egyptian Stonehenge. It was found, in, I believe, in 1970, officially, quote-unquote. And Nabta Playa has references to this Milky Way. And next to our Milky Way galaxy is a Sagittarius dwarf galaxy. A Sagittarius dwarf galaxy. And that Sagittarius dwarf galaxy is where he speculates they may be coming from. That's what Nabta Playa points to, and it predates a whole lot of stuff in Egypt. But of course, it's a mystery; it hasn't been dug up. It's basically like a Stonehenge, an astronomical Stonehenge of sorts. He also speculates about Sirius. Sirius is another one that's in the Belt of Orion. So we got a couple different places here, and it should be interesting to see how all this turns out. I'll have to read it again, then tell you if I see anything else. There's all kinds of different stuff in here about the musical notes of Enki and Enlil, their numerical value, why, it's got all kinds of nuggets in there, all kinds of nuggets. If you like Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men, this was one to get. You can't get it from Amazon, or at least I couldn't. I canceled the order from Amazon and ordered it from the publisher or someone that was distributing it. One of the alternative news and research distributors, simply because you can't get it from Amazon. With what he did in Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men, with what he's telling you, he's a legitimate truth seeker. And if you're a legitimate truth seeker and you're looking for the truth, you're going to have to spill it. You're not going to be able to sit there and lie. He's just speculating down. Of course, he doesn't know the whole truth. He's just trying to speculate on the area it may go. But you're going to have to spill the goods. You're going to have to spill the goods. And sometimes spilling the goods is messy. But I want to go into some questions and answers. So the verdict on Grid of the Gods has got some fascinating stuff in there. If you like pyramids, reading about pyramids, if you've read all his other books and listened to what he has to say, by all means, it's one to own. Own it directly. You can buy it directly from the publisher, though, if you can't get it from Amazon. And I don't know, by the time you hear this, if you'll have it from Amazon. Amazon is, in my opinion, he's getting the cold shoulder. He's getting the cold shoulder because he's spilling the goods on Team Pink Rabbit. He's spilling the goods. I've been asked a question about my opinion on Prison Planet. A lot of you have seen PrisonPlanet.com and this concept of a prison planet. Well, it always goes in one direction. And this is an ancient concept. This is a concept that spreads to most of the mythologies of the world. It's a concept that's all over the Bible. I've been told by people I trust that this concept is all over the Bible. It isn't someone like Dr. Farrell would have to tease it out for us, because I can't tell you exactly where and how it's all over the Bible, but it is. I believe that. But someone like Dr. Farrell would have to tease out, or could actually write a book on the prison planet hypothesis. And it goes back in one area, an ancient cosmic war that spread across this this solar system, where this great civilization went into war, two factions, Kronos and Zeus, you might as well say. And basically, one side locked the other down here. One side locked the other down here. And there's no getting past the moon, or some say there's no getting past Mars, or there's a layered quarantine. Basically, we're in quarantine. There are those that believe humans are here because we've done something wrong. I think that's bullshit. I don't think anyone's done anything wrong at all. It's kind of just accidental. White rabbits are here. It's accidental that Africans are here. If this is true, I have no idea, but I understand where it comes from. But it is an ancient, it's not new. Prison planet hypothesis is nothing new. And this is going to be, area is going to be locked down until they resolve this. One thing he goes into, by the way, in Grid of the Gods is he touches on, and I've heard him talk about this before, but when it comes down to things like, and the reason for this quarantine is because some of their technology and some of the bad side, if you will, they didn't want getting out. So they locked it down. They quarantined. You know, let's say you can't go past the moon. The moon and Earth are in permanent quarantine until they come back and solve this, or until he comes back and beats their asses, something along those lines. Well, that's solving something, isn't it? Basically, in Grid of the Gods, he talks about something in South America. Now, a lot of people get upset that I say there are no gray aliens. The problem is that the people that I respect, that actually have read the mythologies, that have put two and two together, and two would have to equal four if the mythologies ever come out to be true, say that the only way that the little gray things could be real is if there's some type of technology left over, and this is crazy. This is very crazy, left over from a high paleo-ancient civilization. In other words, they're synthetic bio-entities. They're little robots. When they get killed, like he points to in the Grid of the Gods, when they're getting killed, the beardless boys, the gray stick men, when they're getting killed, they give off toxic stuff, and they don't have anything inside. It just doesn't really make sense, if that's what they are. You know, so that's why I said they're not aliens. I don't know anyone that thinks they're aliens except crazy people watch Discovery Channel. I believe they're propaganda out of World War II, having to do with our enemy's New World Order. But that doesn't mean there couldn't be some kind of little synthetic bioentity that they just created 30 years ago. I have no idea. Some people believe they're both. Ancient technology left over, but part of their New World Order plan. You know, like the devil's little angels, or the devil's little demons, I should say. I have no idea. Once you go down this road, I'll have to see it to believe it, but I've heard it all. And of course, this synthetic bioentities and the little automatons or you know, artificial intelligence, if you will, goes into another area, and hopefully you're listening to that on this podcast. It should be Sci-Fi Louie or Lucifer and Artificial Intelligence. That's something you better know about. When it comes to the grays, those that believe that have a tendency to believe Lucifer could be, speculate that Lucifer could be something like that. A paleo-ancient civilization has a rogue Terminator, a big ball of mercury that was running around doing good, you know, some high cherub that gets, just tool back and listen to Sci-Fi Louie again. But the grays would be like the demons, his little helpers on some level. You know, you're dealing with artificial intelligence locked down here that they're coming back to get rid of. I don't know. It's really, it goes so far out there. The problem with the stuff going so far out there is two things. One, it's all over our mythology. You just got to uncrack it. You just got to uncrack the codes that this paleo-ancient civilization may have been here, this very high civilization beyond our comprehension with technology. And that, two, if they were here, there's three scenarios. There's a side, they would be either off-planet, there are those that would be locked down here, and they would either be right in front of our face or underneath the ground in bunkers, which is how we would survive if there were a big disaster here, or some combination of all of the above. And I don't know exactly where that will go. I don't know where that would go. But there would be a side here and a side coming here to annihilate them, and then they'll tell us what's going on. It's that simple. Next question is regards to how these different groups come in. You know, the question is, they were watching Ancient Aliens, and the Marabouta talks about they show up like Independence Day and go at it. Well, they can show up like that. The Hopis have legends where their good white brother shows up, and he's flying around like Superman. This is what they say. I mean, these aren't white people. Crazy little skinheads or something like that, talking about Odin's flying around. This is the Hopis saying this, and he's got a spear that won't miss. You know, and he's just knocking the living daylights out of everything. You can't do anything with them once they set up here. I don't know if it's going to show up one way or another. My guess is, based on what those crazy Nazis did, you see, if he's real, he's coming here or here now. This sounds crazy. And he comes out of nowhere. You can read up on Zeus. They come out of nowhere, and it is Judgment Day. It is Judgment Day. Now, whether or not they'll show up in big ships, I have no idea. I have no idea. But he has a tendency to come out, and he would be Germany's secret king. And he will come out and just start slamming whole sections of the planet. You know, he probably would be playing the role of the Kalki. And our race has a lot of mysterious stuff to it. So we got these white gods showing up all over the planet, building things, quote unquote gods. Outrageous technology. We have all these different legends, and you don't even have to look at what Europeans say. Forget that. Just look at what everyone else says. You've got all kinds of strange stuff. And it is, grounds for speculation. Then you got the Nazis, of course, lighting beacons, the mythological gods who, you know, most of us don't believe in. You're resurrecting their technology. The Nazis resurrecting mythological technology and igniting it like a beacon to gods who don't exist. This is the big problem here. I don't like speculating on what my race can or can't do, because I've never seen it done successfully. It's really crazy stuff, and we live in fascinating times, because everyone listening to this is going to see this come to a head. And this is being recorded actually in 2011 in July and August. So you're going to see it come to a head very, very quickly coming into this fall. You're going to see they're going to unleash the nihilists. The destroyers of civilizations are going to be unleashed. It's going to come to a head into World War III. And we're going to get, it's a time on the calendar where our race, you know, like I'm going to say in the last part, and I'm going to end it here, our race awoken on this planet as this planet started dying. And that's a fascinating thing to understand. Our race did not even wake up until this planet started dying. Our race didn't even go to the moon until this planet was well on its way to dying. Most of the races of this world, whether it be like the Africans, are in serious state of decay. Our race is just kind of hanging out. You know, inventing things like the internet. Most other people can't even feed themselves. Most rabbits on this planet have it pretty bad. Our race is, you know, we're watching chicken fried steak eating contests. There's several different worlds on one planet going on at the same time. And we're in a whole nother world. And certain parties are trying to hold us back. We don't want that. But, I'm going to go ahead and end that there. Well, there's one other section coming up, and I answer a question about, the origins of Buddhism and some other things like that, and maybe the origins of white rabbit genocide. I speculate on that since we're down this angle. And that will be the end of part B of the Elitesters. But hang in there, and there's another 10-minute or 15-minute section coming. I have a fascinating question. It's from the alternative news and research side. It has to do with our race being spread out around the planet, because I've talked about this. Our race is spread out all over the Earth. And it actually, in ancient times, there's evidence that we're also spread out over ancient Earth, over the ancient planet, in a lot more areas than most listeners would think. A lot more listeners. In the previous section, I talk about Puma Punku. Some of those places in South America, if I can pronounce it correctly, in the Viracocha, and the different, all over North and South America, there's been a tremendous amount of skeletons, and most of them are squirreled away into the Smithsonian, where they hide our enemies, different questions we have about certain other genetic entities, kind of like giants. That's simply a fact. They're all in the Smithsonian. Everything disappears in the Smithsonian. Except in South America, a lot of interesting things have come up. But our race was spread out over the world. And, of course, when our race came west, we didn't exactly see a lot of white people walking around North America. They were either red or red hybrids. Red in part white, and there's a lot of questions about certain North American Indian tribes and how European they may or may not be, genetically, their maternal line or their something like that. You know, a lot of people get DNA tests and they think they're part Indian, and it's come to find out that Europeans were spread out all over the planet, and more people are related to us than we are to them. So it's kind of difficult when you get into these DNA tests and someone says you have an ancient mother that was from this area of the world or that area of the world. Well, most likely that area of the world may have an ancient mother that was European. That's more likely than the other way around. But this is one of the dilemmas, and the question is, do I think there was an ancient, or do I think the policy of white rabbit genocide goes all the way back? And then they're asking if I know about the Buddhist tankas, which are rare Buddhist, ancient Buddhist like type paintings, spreading things out. I'll go into those in a second, but the answer is I don't see any evidence that the leadsters, as I call them, the Y chromosomes, to simplify things, those that carry the Y chromosomes. Our enemy is an enemy within an enemy. You have the little Jew rabbits that they test for, and they test the maternal line, and then you have whatever controlling fractions. And those are all usually some type of Y chromosome, saying they're related to some monster from ancient times, literally. I don't see that they agreed with the... when you get into the Jewish elites, you go back to the Immigration Act of 1924, they were already calling for all this stuff. But that didn't work. It didn't work until after World War II. After World War II, someone agreed with them. They didn't agree with them in 1924. They agreed with them after that. So I don't see any evidence of that in modern times. But if what they say is true, if they're related to what they are related to, and if those entities are still around, well clearly that would be a case, and this message would be a lot bigger than even I can imagine. White rabbit genocide would be a lot bigger and a lot older than I can imagine. And what the person is asking about, most of my audience has never seen these things. I have a magazine that's Alternative News and Research. It's the only magazine that I've ever seen anything like this laid out. You cannot find this type of thing online. Buddhist all over the world, what we have here is turmoil. Like the Dr. Farrell lays out, there was an ancient group of elites that came in and set up all these ancient civilizations. They're all linked. We know that Sumer, the British Isles, Egypt, ancient Greece are all linked to the Sumerian sexagesimal system, especially even the modern metric system. This is a mathematical fact. You can't argue it. It has to be some level of intelligence to do that. And so we have one group of elites as he's making a case. We also have another, something else asserting itself. And when that something else asserts itself in mythology, quote unquote, whether it be in Egypt or anywhere else, we have a lot of weird stuff going on. And a lot of weird stuff recorded, whether it be red-haired children being murdered in Egypt. You have all kinds of stuff like that. But what they're asking me about is if I've seen one of the, which relates to this whole entire episode, the Buddhist Tanka. And you're asking me about the Mahasiddha Virupa, as I call it, which I'm not pronouncing correctly. That's Mahasiddha Virupa. And the answer is yes. Yes, I have what you're talking about in front of me. And this is a topic I know a little bit about. Buddhism was a religion, and the Dr. Farrells would define it as religion only because it had something revealed. Hinduism would not be a religion because nothing was revealed, but the Buddha revealed something. Buddhism does not have a peaceful origin. All the religions where you get something revealed generally have a pretty violent origin. Buddhism came in and conquered Bonpo. They gained their first monasteries. They were actually stolen from Bonpo. Bonpo was like an ancient warrior religion of Tibet and that type of thing. But Buddhism has extremely violent beginnings. And if you could see the article that I'm reading, it would have Different things, flailed human skins from Tibetan monasteries on display in China. This is, and we're not talking about recent stuff, we're talking about ancient stuff, but in one of the tankas, the famous tanka of the Mahasiddhavirupa, and I spelled it, I'll spell it again, you can look it up, you won't see a whole lot online, but it's Mahasiddhavirupa. You basically have a giant sitting in meditation position with a, I think it's some type of meditation string around his leg, one leg and his belly, and he has his private area showing, and he's sitting, and he's impaling a little blonde boy. He's impaling a little blonde boy. So we have a little blonde boy impaled in the position, and a tanka is simply like a Buddhist type of painting, I believe. You can look it up, T-A-N-K-A. I've only seen pictures of him. I've never seen one live. And he's impaling a little blonde boy alive. There's a dog underneath him. And he's giving a very famous Masonic hand signal. Everyone listening has seen this. Our enemy does this all the time. and when you know, if you see this type of thing, and then it makes you, you know, anyone that's listening to White Rabbit Genocide, and you understand this is ancient stuff, you understand what's going on here today. The question is, do I think there's a connection? There's no way to know, but you know, seeing this type of thing has always made me suspicious, because if the enemy is what they say they are, sure, sure. But I have no way to know of anything prior to 1950. Someone just agreed with it, and then they went into White Rabbit Genocide. They tried to wipe us out. This ain't working as good as it did in ancient times, but there could be a connection, sure. I mean, White Rabbit Genocide could be a lot larger message than anything I know of. But I have no way to know that. But all the more reason to fight it. But the images you're asking me about are probably some of the most disturbing things I've ever seen. Because they are not recent, they're ancient. Seeing white people being displayed as evil, seeing white children being displayed as evil races, that's very common, that's very modern. Seeing seeing them be butchered or murdered in stories or in actual ancient tankas, Buddhist tankas, is extremely disturbing. Yeah, obviously. But again, this is you might be able to look him up online. You might be able to see it. Usually there's something devouring a blonde child, and he's always given the same Masonic hand signal. It's an ancient hand. Masonic is not new. It's not, Jew is just a word. You know, everyone's, the Masons are Jews. This is ancient stuff that's been heavily distorted and heavily manipulated, but it is extremely disturbing stuff. Yes, I've never seen this particular one online, and if it were on TV, it would pretty much shock people. Why was this done? Why would something like this be done? Buddhism is thought to be a peaceful religion with a peaceful origin. Well, none of the religions, as the Dr. Farrells define them, something that where something was revealed, had any type of peaceful origin at all. They always come out with a tremendous amount of bloodshed. Even the divisions within that religion, which are, you know, many of these warring episodes between Christians and Protestants are totally unnecessary. It's insanity. But they even have bloody origins. The Protestants have a bloody origin. I mean, right or wrong, I'm not saying they're bad people. All of us, many of us have been in Protestant churches or whatever, or educated by Jesuits or whatever. We're not talking about that. I'm just saying objectively that anytime you have these religions come out, they have a violent origin. Buddhism is one that most people don't know about. But the stories of our race being killed in ancient times all over the world are something that'll come out. I just don't know. I don't know. I'm aware of it. I'm leery of it, you know, because you have things like the Boer genocide of South Africa. You have the people in London who always give the same hand signal that I'm looking at of a giant giving as he impales a little blonde boy alive. It makes you think a little bit. Some things never change. But I would have no way of knowing. My impression is that if any of this is true, if what they say is true, if they are what they say they are, sure. And they're over with, too. So there's nothing to worry about there. But, you know, all the more reason, I guess, to be on message. White Rabbit Genocide. But I have no way of knowing. But I am aware of it. And that's something I just made an audience aware of, that most of them have never seen this type of thing. If you're not in alternative news and research, if you're not looking at some of their stuff, and there's a lot of garbage in there. In the magazine I'm looking at, is full of garbage. It's full of nonsense. But this episode about the origin of Buddhism is accurate, is well-sourced, and the pictures were worth 1,000 words. The pictures are extremely, extremely disturbing, because you just don't up and paint something like that in Tibet. I don't think, do you? You know, you just don't up and paint something like that on the far side of the world. Or talk about murdering red-haired children for sport, all this weird stuff. There's just a lot of weird stuff, and it always involves white rabbit genocide, literally. Very disturbing stuff, but thanks for sending in that question. That's something that most listeners don't know about, and I wish if I had a scanner available, I'd scan it in, and you would be able to immediately understand. I don't have a scanner available, but this is the type of thing you're dealing with in ancient times. You have one elite that someone showed up here and got something going. You have another group of elites, supposedly, in mythology, quote-unquote, asserting themselves. And you have a whole lot of white rabbit genocide. That's simply a fact. A whole lot of weird stuff going on. And that's I see it, and seeing's believing. And now we have this again, except this time it's I don't think it's going to go so well for them. But we'll see. We'll see. Now on to the next phase.